And being a righteous man and unwilling to expose her to public disgrace, planned to divorce her quietly. But just when he had resolved to do this, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream and said, "Joseph, son of David, do not be afraid to take Mary as your wife, for the child conceived in her is from the Holy Spirit. She will bear a son, and you are to name him Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins." All this took place to fulfill what had been spoken by the Lord through the prophet. "Look, the virgin shall become pregnant and give birth to a son, and they shall name him Emmanuel," which means God is with us. When Joseph awoke from sleep, he did as the angel of the Lord commanded him. He took her as his wife, but had no marital relations with her until she had given birth to a son, and he named him Jesus. 1 Corinthians 13:7. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things.
A little poll to start with this morning. Here's the question, then I'll give you some answers. Can or does God feel? Can or does God feel? So, who thinks that God feels like we do? Who God has feelings like human beings? Who doesn't think that God feels in the same way that we describe our feelings? Who's never thought of it before? I suspected that. Yet we practice our faith. We've been practicing it for centuries as if God feels. As if God feels the same way we feel. That's the way we practice it. I'm scared to think, though, if God does feel the way we feel. That's kind of a scary thought. But we've always believed that somehow God does feel things at least a little bit like we do. And I don't honestly know that, really, but I've been giving it some thought over the last few weeks as I pondered this theme of love for this last Sunday of Advent. The Bible does describe God as a feeling God, a God who loves, who hates, who gets angry and jealous, a God who feels grief and joy, compassion and sorrow. From ancient days, even before Jesus, people have described a feeling God. Now, it's beyond my tiny intellect to imagine how God feels these things and what God does with these feelings, although it's been written about. But we can surmise that somehow if we are made in God's image, that somehow part of that image is our capacity to feel as well. And that all feelings that we experience are not only valid feelings, all feelings are acceptable. All feelings. If God can get angry, if God can get jealous, if God can love. Feelings themselves do not have any value in a sense. It's really what we do with our feelings that makes a difference. Whether they help us live life well or influence us to our detriment. So today we speak of love in the Christian calendar. Now, describing what love is just as complicated as describing what peace and hope are. It's a complex emotion. But the primary quality of God, Christians have always contended, is love. How many of you believe that love is a feeling? Love is a feeling. How many would say that love is not a feeling, but something else or something more than a feeling? Of course, you're both right. Researchers have found that asking people if love is a feeling gets an overwhelming positive response that love is primarily something we feel, though almost impossible to describe. Love is complicated and is considered more than a feeling by those who study love. So therefore, love isn't just one thing or even one feeling. It's this powerful blend of emotion, thought, behavior, and even a biological drive that facilitates relationships. In 2021, sociologist, writer, and speaker Brené Brown published a book called Atlas of the Heart. Atlas of the Heart. And in it, she sought to explore all of the human emotions as they relate to meaningful connection between human beings. And so meaningful connection to ourselves and meaningful connection to others, to describe some of those feelings. And after much research, she defines love this way. We've got it on the screen, Keith. We cultivate love when we allow our most vulnerable and powerful selves to be deeply seen and known, and when we honor the spiritual connection that grows from that offering of ourselves with trust, respect, kindness, and affection. Love is not something that we give or even get. It is something that we nurture and grow in ourselves, in our relationships. A connection that can be cultivated between two people only when it exists within each one of them. Therefore, love can only take place in a relationship when that connection is felt between two people or groups of people. We can love others only as much as we cultivate love in ourselves. Shame, blame, disrespect, betrayal, and the withholding of affection damage the roots from which love grows. Love can survive these injuries only if they're acknowledged, healed, and rare. The connection, when it is broken because of disrespect or putting each other down or withholding affection, when the connection is broken, love is broken. It is no longer love. She goes on to say that she doesn't ever think that we'll ever truly understand love or really any emotions, because in the end, they're a bit of a mystery. Perhaps the best way to understand love is to consider it as a driving force behind deep connection. Love is the driving force behind deep connection with God, with ourselves, and with others. And it's mutual. Love always has to be mutual. We both have to feel it. The deeper the connection, the stronger the love. And in deep relationships, partnerships, children, as you continue to deepen the connection, the more love there is. It's about the bonds and the commitment we share, the intimacy that grows, and the ways in which we tangibly demonstrate these things. Because love will always result in how we act toward another person. So in the nativity story that Karen read this morning in the Gospel of Matthew, this story focuses more on Joseph than Mary and the intense struggle he went through when he had to decide whether or not he wanted to stay with Mary. Even though the story tells us that the child that will be born is not his. And in his culture, he was well within his rights, according to custom, to abandon her and leave her to the consequences. Until one night he had this dream, and God sent an angel and said to Joseph, I want you to stay with Mary. I want you to remain in this relationship. Make the deep commitment and raise the child as your own. It was an extremely difficult decision, for it would bring on Joseph ridicule and shame, really on both of them, most likely, if he didn't stay in the relationship. Yet in the end, he chose, over his own tradition and even religious law or social pressure, he chose her. He chose his commitment to her. He chose to love her. And his commitment to God, to fulfill his commitment to God, to nurture this relationship at a significant cost to himself. That is love. And this is how God shows up for us. We may not know how God feels about us, but we know that God shows up for us. God continues to sustain us, to give us what we need. God provides for us. God's always with us, accepting us for just who we are. Now, I don't know about you. I've often thought what I would do on this earth if I were God. And I might have given up on us a long time ago. And God has never, never given up and continues to invite us into that intimate relationship. Joseph could have very easily given up on Mary and would have been praised for his actions. Instead, he chose to lean in and make a significant sacrifice for her sake. And this is love. Commitment, sacrifice. Love doesn't give up on anybody. It doesn't pressure someone to be who they're not. It doesn't coerce or ridicule or judge or put down. Love always, you can tell it's love because it always draws us closer into more intimacy. That is love. And Brené Brown says, we need more real love. Gritty, dangerous, wild-eyed, justice-seeking love. That's the kind of love we need. Love is not soft and gentle and doe-eyed. Love takes courage. It requires us to be open-eyed and all in, with a reckless determination to be there for each other, even if it costs. We need this kind of love more than ever today, the kind that takes risks to care for one another. This is the kind of love we need for each other and for the world, the kind of love we need to exhibit in the church because we speak of it all the time, an inclusive and accepting love for each other. We need to risk everything in our churches to offer this kind of love to the world because we're not seeing it that much anymore. The kind that Joseph offered to Mary. The professor, social critic, and writer Bell Hooks writes, everywhere we learn that love is important, and yet we are bombarded by its failure. I'm going to say that again. Everywhere we turn, we learn that love is important, and yet we are bombarded by its failure. In the realm of the political, among the religious, in our families, and in our romantic lives, we see little indication that love informs decisions, strengthens our understanding of community, or keeps us together. This bleak picture in no way alters the nature of our longing. We still hope that love will prevail. We still believe in love's promise. Today, in an age of unprecedented technological advances, we have never been more connected in some ways. But it is a pseudo-connection because it requires no intimacy and it requires no sacrifice. People, therefore, are dying of loneliness, abandonment, and heartbreak. So many people are not experiencing a whole lot of love in their lives. Often the opposite. As Christians, our connection to God will always compel us to create connection with each other. Jesus said that this is how people will know that we follow him, if we love each other. The church has to be God with skin on, even if it costs us everything. For that's what God asked of Joseph, and that's what God asks of us. It is the least we can do for God, who has given everything to us. As we grow spiritually, we will grow in love. It's a test of our faith. What is love, I asked you at the beginning? Maybe it's time we really find out. Let's take a moment for reflection.